Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up? This
is a hey, how you doing?
Party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, solid. Right on.
Hey, good morning, everybody. How you doing? It is a Monday morning. Welcome on into the Earl Ingram Show. As you can tell, I'm not Earl Ingram. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today and tomorrow. Earl will be back on Wednesday, and today is a Monday. It's the 26th day of February. We're in the last week of this month of February. And by the way, before I go any further, I do want to mention that today is the day Johnny Cash was born back in 1932. He passed away in 2003, but left a legacy of great music. Johnny Cash, born on this date, 1932. Hey, I hope you're having a good day so far. And keep in mind that since this is the last week of February, and we have a leap year this year, which will be, what, Thursday? Well, this Friday is the first day of March, which means it's the first day of meteorological spring, okay? For meteorological purposes, spring is March, April, and May. Of course, the astrological spring doesn't begin until March 20th, but any little move towards spring is good for me, that's for sure. Some crazy weather these days, huh? Warm and then cold. It's supposed to be pretty windy today, just about every place around Wisconsin. Hey, it was a big weekend for those of us who are baseball fans. Yeah, baseball is back, at least spring training baseball. The Brewers are 1-1 so far. They beat the Padres on Saturday, lost to the Rockies yesterday. But baseball is back, and it'll just be, a matter of time, another month or so, until the games actually count. And also, speaking of sports, the Bucks are starting to come around now. They beat the Sixers yesterday in a big nationally televised game. 5-7 now under Doc Rivers. So that's looking good. Bucks coming around. And we have a lot of different topics to go over today. I am joined by my producer, Calvin. Brother, how you doing today? Hey, are you there?
I'm doing good, Stu. No, it's okay. I'm doing good, Stu. I'm looking forward to a good 2 days. I think it will be fun.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun. Let me ask you this. What do you think? Do you have an opinion about the economy? How do you feel the economy is going? Do you look at the economy from a personal standpoint? Like, well, my economy is going okay, but I don't know about the overall economy. Do you have any opinion on that, Calvin?
Well, so for me, I feel like I don't have a good judge of how the economy affects me because I've only been in the workforce for a few years. I just graduated college in 2023. 22?
Are you sure?
Yes.
It doesn't sound like you're sure.
now I'm at second guess myself. 2022, May 2022, I graduated. So
okay, 2 years ago almost.
So yeah, the economy as it is now is kind of all I've known. So I sense it's getting better. I think the macro numbers tell us it's getting better, but I don't know where my perspective lies.
Okay. Well, that's a good, honest answer. Let me ask you this. Since you just graduated from college, you probably don't remember the 1990s that well. Is that right?
No, I was born in 98.
Okay. Well, the reason why I ask you this is because there is a new story in the New York Times that says we, the United States, may be in for a productivity boom. And that's what happened in the 1990s, mainly because of computers and the internet. But this headline in the New York Times says, are we in a productivity boom? For clues, look to 1994. And evidently, it looks like we could be in for a boom over the next few years. And you know, there's a lot of controversy about how the economy is doing. A lot of the metrics that we look at to define the economy and how it's doing are looking pretty good. Yet, when people are asked, many people say, the economy is not doing that well. But as far as the metrics are concerned, unemployment is at an all-time low for all segments of society, and businesses seem to be doing pretty well. The subheadline in this story from the New York Times says, 30 years ago, the United States entered an era of productivity gains that enabled healthy growth. Experts are asking if it could happen again. And this story was posted a few days ago at the New York Times. And it starts out like this. It says, the last time the American economy was posting surprising economic growth numbers amid rapid wage gains and moderating inflation, Ace of Base and All for One topped the Billboard charts and denim overalls were in vogue. 30 years ago, officials at the Federal Reserve were hotly debating whether the economy could continue to chug along so vigorously without spurring a pickup in inflation. And back in 1994, it turned out that it could, thanks to one key ingredient, and that is productivity. Now, official productivity data are showing a big pickup for the first time in years. The data have been volatile since the start of the pandemic, but with the dawn of new technologies like artificial intelligence and the embrace of hybrid work setups, some economists are asking whether the recent gains might be real and whether they can turn into a lasting boom. By the way, if you have an opinion on this, I'd like to hear what you have to say. The phone number is 844-967-2789. Let me know your thoughts on the economy. Getting back to the story in the New York Times, it says, if the answer is yes, that this could turn into a lasting boom, it would have huge implications for the U.S. economy. Improved productivity would mean that firms could create more product per worker. And a steady pickup in productivity could allow the economy to take off in a healthy way. More productive companies are able to pay better wages without having to raise prices or sacrifice profits. Several of the trends in place today have parallels with what was happening in 1994, but the differences explain why many economists are not yet ready to declare a turning point. The computer age versus the Zoom age. 1990s was when the computer age was really taking off. Businesses and people were buying computers and logging into or onto the internet by the mid-90s. So the computer age versus the boom age, or the Zoom age, I should say. By the end of the 1980s, computers had been around for decades, but had not yet generated big gains to productivity, what has come to be known as the productivity paradox. The economist Robert Solow famously said in 1987, quote, you can see the computer age everywhere but in the productivity statistics. That changed by the middle of the 1990s, as semiconductor manufacturing improved and computers became cheaper. Businesses began to learn how to invest in information technology, and it helped productivity to boom. For years, economists and analysts have questioned whether we might be experiencing a new productivity paradox. Despite our sudden access to cloud computing, rapid internet connections, and mobile phones, productivity gains were tepid in the late 2000s and throughout the 2010s. Since 2020, companies have learned how to leverage existing digital tools in new ways as employees shifted toward remote work. Will that cause lasting efficiency improvements in some sectors? Well, so far, whether remote work is good or bad for productivity remains hotly debated, as a recent paper by Nicholas Bloom at Stanford and other researchers explained. Early research has suggested that employees may be less efficient when they are totally remote, and that hybrid work leads to small, if any, productivity gains. But workers who are saving commuting and grooming time often feel more productive, even if that saved time isn't captured in official productivity data. So here's a quote from Mr. Bloom. It says, the studies probably understate the effect. Mr. Bloom said, explaining that employees who are happier, thanks to job flexibility, may be less likely to quit, helping companies to avoid unproductive retraining. Remote work could also allow companies to move more tedious jobs abroad, he thinks, shuffling Americans toward more dynamic work. He says the aggregate story is potentially pretty powerful. Yeah, that's what he said in an interview, predicting that remote work is midway through unleashing a decade-long productivity boom. He says we're in a brave new world. It's going to take years. So the internet, which was new 30 years ago, versus artificial intelligence, which is obviously coming into play right now. So how do these two things compare? Well, in the 1990s, the World Wide Web was coming into widespread use. Companies initially fretted that it might sidetrack their workers. In parentheses here, it says, oh, what a tangled web, this internet. A 1995 article in the New York Times sighed about online distractions. But the tools ultimately streamlined many types of work. One retrospective on the 1990s boom found that a combination of efficient computer manufacturing and increased information technology use accounted for about two-thirds of that era's productivity pickup. Well, today's shiny new technology equivalent is artificial intelligence. While many economists said it was probably too early to see the benefits of artificial intelligence showing through in full force, some proponents think it could prove transformative by automating mental tasks, including proposal writing and emails. Got to take a break. It's going to be a short one. Stick around. Give us a call if you have an opinion on the economy, 844-967-2789. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today. He'll be back on Wednesday. Hope you're having a good day so far. Been talking about the economy in the first segment. If you have an opinion on that, feel free to call in 844-967-2789. And the next thing I want to look at here is, and by the way, it does look like we have a caller. Why don't we go to the phone line here since this is a short segment? Tom from West Allis is on the phone. Hey, good morning, Tom. What do you have to say?
Hey, good morning. You know, I'm questioning the economy in a way. My side job, I do a lot of deliveries for a company that on Saturday, my boss told me this is really weird. He goes, normally we have 30, 40, internet orders, and as of right now, I have zero. In which then I told, he goes, you know, what he was saying, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. He said, you know, I think people are really worried about the economy and they're afraid to spend money. And then I came back with, well, you know, I question that because I go out to restaurants and they're packed. I go grocery shopping and the supermarkets are full. You know, I know he's one of these Fox News listening people too. So I really wonder where people are thinking, you know, cause we hear all this great news and I see it But yet we have a news organization, or a few of them, who are saying that, no, the Biden economy is horrible. It's all a lie. All these numbers are fake. I don't know how to interpret it. And that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah. Well, hey, Tom, before you go, let me ask you, just from your standpoint, and I know that you told us one anecdotal piece of evidence that the guy who you work for said that that particular Saturday was slow. But how do you look at the overall economy when you look at the economy of Wisconsin and the economy of the United States? What is your personal opinion? How do you feel it's going?
I think it's going good. I mean, it's spotty. I think there are things that people are used to that aren't anymore. I think people look at, like, well, this Saturday also, Saturday night, we went out to Bob Fisher on the east side of Milwaukee, and they close at 9 or 10, 9 or 10 on a Saturday. That used to be a 24-hour restaurant. Same with down the street from my own business, which, yeah, is hit and miss there. But it's a different type of thing. But that restaurant, too, used to be open 24/7. I think people don't see things going back to the way they were before the pandemic, and therefore that's got to be a drag on the economy for that reason.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, I would agree with that. Not everybody sees the gains that are going on nationally and statewide. But as far as the statistics are concerned, the economy, at least according to the statistics and the metrics we use to measure the economy, seems to be rolling right along. Tom, thank you for your call. And let's go to another Tom. Now looks like Tom from LA is on the line. Hey, good morning, Tom. Thank you for calling in. What do you have to say today?
Hey, Stu. Good to hear from you, buddy.
All right.
First off, we the people are the government, not the corporations. And let's wake up and realize that. You know, this isn't rocket science. Number one, when someone asks how you feel about the economy, that's like asking someone, are you happy today? Well, yeah, if something good happens today, I'll be happy. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of a crazy
right.
question. But what I would say, I mean, if your dog just passed away or whatever, you're probably not going to be happy, right? If something happened where you weren't able to buy that big screen TV, because I think people's wants and needs have become greater than they used to be. And everyone thinks that they should be living the lifestyles of the rich and famous when the rich and famous are actually, you know, the billionaire class, which four families own more wealth than 80% of the rest of the country. So, you know, there's that. But I think it's not rocket science, because what the Democratic Party does is, and the Democratic president, is they invest back in we the people. They don't just give more mega tax breaks for the billionaire class.
Mm-hmm.
And under Donald Trump, $2 trillion in tax cuts. You know, go back. And the thing is, it's not, I mean, you might get a $300 tax cut, the regular Joe out there, but the billionaire is getting millions, and they're actually not even having to pay any taxes. I mean, again, mm-hmm. people realize we pay more taxes than the billionaire class. There's something wrong with that. But the Democrats and what Joe Biden and Bidenomics has done is, again, investing in manufacturing, investing in bringing jobs back to the United States, investing in unions and supporting unions, supporting education. I mean, all the different things that are pretty simplistic, but it goes back to we the people. And we the people are the engine behind this whole thing. If you give a billionaire a tax break, he's not going to spend that into the economy, and it's not going to actually circulate. So you have to have money that's circulating. So honestly, the best return on investment, whether people want to believe it or not, are education, medical care, actually food stamps, gives you $1.60 back for every dollar you spend. Because the people down at the lower end of the ladder they're the ones that are spending the money immediately, which circulates through the economy. The billionaire and the rich are just hoarding the money. They're no different than hoarders that you see of people that collect papers all the way up to the top of their ceiling. They're the same exact type of psychology, or the same type of problem that people that are hoarders have, but they hoard their money. I don't know if anybody in the audience can actually list one event or one law or one type of thing that the Republicans have introduced, legislation that the Republicans have introduced that has helped working people. All, and then go with the Democratic Party. Who has helped working people more?
Yeah, well, some people say that the two parties, one of them is a party that looks out for corporations and the billionaires, and the other party is one that looks out for the people, the working class and the middle class. Would you agree with that? Nope, he's gone. It looks like we were running out of time. Time to go to a break. All right, stick around. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Earl Ingram Show. The phone number is 844-967-2789. We'll get to the other callers on the other side of the break. Stick around. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show on this Monday morning. Hope you're having a good day so far. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today and tomorrow. He will be back on Wednesday. And we've been discussing the economy, the fact that the U.S. economy may be in for a big boom with new technology like artificial intelligence coming to just about everything we do. And the story in the New York Times that we were discussing is saying that these next several years may be similar to what we experienced 30 years ago when the economy took off during the 1990s with the advent of the internet, the World Wide Web as we knew it back then. And things really took off for several years, probably you could say up until 9/11, right? From 1994 until 9/11 in 2001, things just cooked along. A lot of people still reminisce about those good old days, the 1990s, when the economy was booming. And they're saying we may be in for something like that again now over the next several years. We heard from some callers. And before I go on to another story, looks like we have Gary from Sussex on the line. We'll see what he has to say today. Good morning, Gary. How are you today?
Stu, it's nice to hear your voice again. I love that when you fill in. I met you a couple of times. I don't know if you ever met. You remember me at all?
I remember Probably you. Not. Yep. No, I really do. I remember you. I haven't met that many listeners. So, yes, I remember.
Yeah, I got turned on to you because of it was on, a Sunday morning. I was listening to some music. I thought, what the heck is this? This is really cool. And then I heard your voice, and I found out the station I was on. And then when I did meet you, I said, I've been listening to you guys because of hearing you on the radio. I think it was on a Sunday afternoon or something. I don't remember what day it was, but that's how I got to know you. All right, but back to business. Okay. I'm a small business owner. I own an HVAC company. And my prices pre-COVID for a brand new high efficiency furnace was $3,900. As of like Friday, I installed the same furnace for $6,300 for high efficiency. So prices have gone up. My markup, I actually keep my markup a little lower. So I was actually making more money at when I was selling a furnace for $3,900 than I do selling it for like $6,300, $6,400. Wow. Because I bring my markup down. I want to try to save people more money. And then with as far as going out to dinner, my wife and I like to go out to dinner a lot, okay, because we're older, and I come home from work, and I don't really want to cook, and my wife, she's working during the daytime and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So we go out to dinner. And as far as going out to eat, a hamburger or a steak or whatever, they've gone like twice as much what it used to cost. And my wife asked me, she said, well, what about a tip? Are we supposed to sit there and pay 20% for a tip when the food is costing us so much? And I said, well, it doesn't. It's really not the waitress's or the server's fault, you know. So then I went online and I found out that because of the price increase, people are giving less in tips now, which is not fair to people. And I'm going to continue giving good tips because these people only make like $2.75 an hour, you know. Mm-hmm. If they didn't have their tips, it'd be terrible, you know. And as far as my son is trying to buy a home, and I looked up also when Obama was president, interest rates were around 3.9. Now they're like 6.5. So when Tom from L.A. goes out and says the economy is doing great, Binomics is good, I kind of disagree with him. I like Tom. I like listening to him. He's a good guy. He's very smart. But I totally disagree with Binomics and as far as the billionaires, yes, there are billionaires out there and they're getting good tax breaks, but they're the ones who are giving everybody the jobs. If there were no billionaires, there would no be big companies for people to work at, you know? So they're the ones that are keeping the economy going, the billionaires. So, you know,
yeah, I would, yeah, Gary, I would encourage you to look into the statistics on that because when you look into the statistics, you often find that most new jobs are created by small businesses and not the corporations. You've heard that before, right?
Well, I've heard that before, but it is true because there are more small business people like myself than there are big, gigantic corporations. There's probably hundreds of times more small businesses, and I agree with that. But these billionaires, they make money because they have big businesses, which if it wasn't for the little people working, they wouldn't be billionaires, you know? So they create jobs for us.
Okay, let me ask you this. How do you think, where do you think we would be if we didn't have the big giant corporations and everything was smaller businesses? What if we didn't have the big multi-billionaires who sit on all this money and just let their money make more money? What if we didn't have these extremes of the multi-billionaires and there were, you know, multi-millionaires? But wouldn't we all be better off if we didn't have the gigantic corporations where two or three different companies own the entire segment or most of the segment of that particular industry?
Well, I'm going back. I'm a capitalist. I work really, really, really hard for my money. I'm 72 years old. I should have been retired years ago, but I like to work. I enjoy my customers. I like fixing things for people. I'm not a salesman, and that's why I usually end up getting sales from people. I usually close the deals at like 95%. When I used to be a salesperson, I used to work for another company. My closing rate was about 30%. I like to fix things. I'm the anti-sales guy. I tell the people, I said, look, you don't need the new furnace. We can fix this. It'll cost you $400 rather than $6,500, you know. But I'm not a socialist. I'm a capitalist. So So I believe that if a billionaire, if he worked that hard and he made $1 billion, I think that they deserve everything that they have coming to them. And if everybody had small businesses, there would be 10,000 times more HVAC guys out there, and 10,000 times more little farmers and whatever else is going out there. Like I said, I'm a capitalist, and if you work hard and you deserve that money, and you earned it, and you created jobs for other people, I'm for it.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And it sounds like your particular business is the kind of business that has to be a local business. I mean, I suppose there are some HVAC companies that try to buy up the other HVAC companies, but it's still a pretty local business. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. You know something, once too, I was on a golf outing this last summer, and I had a large heating company, the president, come up to me, and he told me, he said, "I'm buying your business, Gary. What will you sell to me for?" And I looked at him and I said, "Why would I sell the Golden Goose for this guy?" Because this, what he does is he buys up small businesses like mine, and he creates a gigantic. He's one of the largest heating companies in Wisconsin. And I told him, I said, "I'm not going to sell." I said, "I'm making money and I'm happy working." And you know what? I'm not rich, but I live a comfortable lifestyle. I live in the same house that my wife and I built when we were 25 years old. I live in the same house. I'm 72 now. If I'm living high off the hog, I'd be living in a really nice place out in, Beaver Lake or something, you know, but I don't.
Yeah.
I live in...
Yeah. One thing, Gary, is personally, I prefer small businesses like yours. I'm glad you didn't sell out to the big business guy. But like you said earlier, you said that if a guy works hard and builds up a business and becomes rich off of it, that's okay because you're a capitalist. But that gentleman you were telling me about that met you on the golf club or that talked to you on the golf course, he's not the kind of guy who's working hard to make millions. He's the kind of guy that's buying up other companies and letting other people work hard so he can make millions. Isn't that right?
Yeah, but he's also creating jobs for people. So if he bought my business, he would take my employees. Then instead of having, 36 employees, then he would have 39 employees. And he bought another business. He had picked up 6 more employees. He's creating jobs for these families, So still,
I don't know. Those jobs were already created. You've already got those employees, right?
Yes.
Yes. So he's not really creating the jobs. He's just buying the jobs from you, and then he's collecting the profits.
Yeah, but I see no problem with that. If he's paying his employees a fair wage, and they're all happy, and he's making millions, good for him.
Yeah, but take that to its logical outcome, and then what that means is that the richest people are going to own everything. That doesn't sound right to me, man. I'd rather have things spread out so that there are lots of small business owners who own the HVAC companies across Wisconsin rather than just a couple of big billionaires controlling the whole thing. That's just my personal opinion.
Right, because, and there's nothing wrong, this is not a cut on you, Stu. But you're a socialist, and I'm not. And you and I
didn't say I was a socialist. I just think that it's better when we're all doing better.
Well, I agree.
Why should there be a couple of big billionaires that own everything? Why couldn't more people have a stake in it, and own their own business?
Well, it was nice talking to you, Stu, and I'll even call back tomorrow because you'll be there because you're a good guy.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you for the call, Gary. It's always nice to hear from you. Thank you very much. Hey, Calvin, how much time do we have before the break? 2 minutes? Let's see what Susan from Kenosha has to say. Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am. I happen to agree with you. I don't agree with Gary. I think that We need smaller businesses to create more jobs for people. The big capitalists have taken all this industry that we used to have in this country, because I'm 74 years old, and I remember my dad worked for Alice Chalmers, and I remember even Hartford built their own cars when I was a kid. We used to go out there. We had relatives out there. We had a big growing industry. And then what happened started in the 80s, I believe, shipped all these jobs overseas.
Right.
And so then what happened was we ended up with hardly any industry, and we became a service industry driven country. And mm-hmm. I feel that we should give the money to the upstart young people who are creating businesses, because they will create the jobs. And the big capitalists who make the millions of dollars, they don't care. You know, and they will buy up businesses, but what they do is they buy up businesses and then they start stripping the manpower. And instead of doing one job or one particular thing, you find yourself doing two or three jobs at a time. So Gary
right.
has to think this through. He's just fortunate that he has held on to his business.
Yeah, you're right, Susan. I agree with you. Thank you for the call. We've got to go to a break. Everybody stick around. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show on Civic Media.
Every time I take one look at you, I get chills up and down my spine. And I like it, I like it, and 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 I like it.
Yes, Mr. Big Stuff. Speaking of the billionaires that are trying to buy up everything, that's a good tune. Mr. Big Stuff. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today and tomorrow. He'll be back on Wednesday. And we were just discussing what happens when a company is taken over by a billionaire or a big corporation, or sometimes a private equity firm. And there's a really good example of this. And by the way, I see that we have more callers already. We'll get to some more calls in just a minute. But I just want to give you an example of what happens sometimes. Instead of things being owned by the original founders of the company or by individuals, when private equity firms come in, take over a business, everything changes. You know, when there are people behind a small business, when there's a family behind a small business, they make decisions that are best for the business, but they also take into consideration the people involved in the business and what may happen to them and how the business is perceived by the public. But once the private equity firm comes in and takes it over, or some big corporation or whoever it may be, things change. And one of the best examples of this is the Panera Bread Company. Okay, Panera Bread. Do you ever go out and eat at Panera Bread? Well, I remember when I first heard about Panera, it's been at least 20 years ago, maybe even longer. And when they first hit the streets, when they first started opening restaurants around Milwaukee and Wisconsin, and across the country, they were considered to be more of a natural food outlet, fast food outlet, fast casual outlet, than the other places that were around at the time, right? They were more concerned. Remember, they even had the big campaign, ad campaign about eating clean and eating clean food. Fewer chemical additives, fewer pesticides. I think when they first came out, some of their stuff was even organic. But now they're owned by a private equity firm. So they don't care about that stuff anymore. They care about making money. How much money can they make? And that's what private equity firms are about, right? So there's a story here from thenation.com. It's the story of late capitalism as told through Panera Bread. It used to make on-site sourdough. Now, the private equity-owned chain is better known for its, allegedly, killer lemonade. Okay, have you heard this story about the lemonade that has so much caffeine in it, it can actually kill you? It says here, lemonade is not generally known to be fatal unless it's from Panera Bread and infused with more caffeine than a 12-ounce Red Bull poured into a 16-ounce Monster energy drink. For select customers, it also comes with unlimited refills, in which case, yes, it could actually kill you. So alleges a wrongful death suit filed against the fast casual chain last October by the family of 21-year-old Sarah Katz, who, after knocking back a 30-ounce charged lemonade in September, went into cardiac arrest and died. Sarah had a heart condition that, at the recommendation of doctors, kept her away from caffeinated beverages. Katz's family alleges Panera failed to properly warn Sarah and other customers of the risks. And by the time of the lawsuit, charged lemonade had already claimed a second victim, 46-year-old Dennis Brown, who went into cardiac arrest after downing three of the beverages in Fleming Island, Florida. Brown, who had a, quote, unspecified chromosomal deficiency disorder, along with a developmental delay and a mild intellectual disability, also avoided energy drinks on account of his high blood pressure. In January, a third person sued Panera, alleging the refreshment gave her permanent cardiac injuries. When unveiled in early 2022, charged lemonade, a, quote, plant-based and clean fruit-forward concoction, purportedly containing about as much caffeine as Panera's dark roast coffee, seemed innocuous, unlikely to garner more attention than the latest soup and salad duo. But in between the deaths of Katz and Brown, the turbo lemonade went viral, causing some stores to relocate the drink rack behind the counter as a safety precaution. Last October, the company went further, adding a warning sign, quote, not recommended for children, people sensitive to caffeine, or pregnant or nursing women. But they still kept selling it. The lawsuits may eventually send charged lemonade the way of Four Loko, which was pulled from the market after plaintiffs successfully argued that the drink known as Blackout in a Can did not make clear the threat it posed to heart, liver, and kidneys. And here's what I was mentioning earlier. Panera wasn't always known as a corporate purveyor of murderous lemonade. Once upon a time, in the cozier Clintonite 1990s, it was known for its San Francisco sourdough. Originally founded in 1987 in Kirkwood, Missouri, as something of an anti-Wonder Bread, the St. Louis Bread Company made everything on site. For sourdough, water and flour have to be weighed to the gram if you want it to crunch on the outside while maintaining an airy, fluffy inside. Quote, it's difficult for a large commercial bakery to create that type of product, founder Ken Rosenthal told local news audiences in 1987. The drink menu pushed roasted coffee, and a cup of water came with a slice of lemon. Initially, carbonated drinks were limited to Jones Soda, a small independent company based in Seattle. Light jazz wafted from the speakers and the smell of fresh baked bread permeated the cafe. When I was growing up in St. Louis, a staple of the bread company was its broccoli cheddar soup, a hearty dish served in a sourdough bread bowl. Obviously, things have changed. And that's a good example of how things change when the big private equity firm comes in. Got to take a break for the top of the hour news. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show on Civic Media.
Tell me, who do you think you are, Mr. Big Stuff? You're never gonna get my love, Mr. Big Stuff. You're never gonna break my heart, Mr. Big Stuff. You're never gonna make me cry, Mr. Big Stuff. Tell me, just who do you think you are, Mr. Big Stuff? You're never gonna get my love, Mr. Big Stuff.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.